From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Such a beautiful day out. It seems like it's still winter, but we're dealing with it, and we are so pleased to be joined by Bishop Jaime Soto. Bishop Soto, always good to see you.
Good to see you, Bob. And how's the family?
Family's doing good. We have 4 kids in college at the same time. Nobody told us they were going to grow up. we may have to start a GoFundMe page or something. But it's what you wish for, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're all faithful Catholics,
which is
wonderful.
Thank God.
Thank God for that. It's a tough time.
Parents, you do the best you can.
Yeah.
And then after that, you have to kind of leave it at in God's hands.
Exactly.
And the young people's conscience.
Exactly. I hope that over the weekend, you were not somewhere between Colfax and Truckee on Interstate 80.
You might still be there. my heart goes out to the people, the priests and the people in those parishes. I mean, it's got to just be a wallop that they've gotten hit so heavily. And I'm not exactly sure what they were able to do this weekend.
Yeah.
It's really been... quite a blizzard, you know.
Yeah, and they say that that's very rare for California to actually predict a blizzard. And they were talking about gusts of wind at 190 miles an hour, and I'm thinking that's unheard of.
I don't know any of the meteorological.
Yeah.
That would make that possible because we didn't have very much.
Kind
of, we had winds, but nothing. Like,
that. We might have had 20, 30 miles.
It'd just be interesting to understand how that happens up in the Sierras.
Yeah, it just they always say up over the peaks, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be. I don't think you could. I think it'd blow your skin off.
I remember one time when I drove up there. I had to go up to Portola. Mm-hmm. And I went up there unprepared, and because I was told, "Oh no, it won't be any problem." And sure enough, boom, storm came in, and trains were required, and I didn't have any in the car, so we pulled over to one of those gas stations that making money hands over fist.
Chains for sale.
For sale, and it was busy that day.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other story some other time.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that place did some business this
weekend. Oh, yeah, yeah. I've been in that. Is it Holy Family in Portola?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been in that parish. And then they've got the Railroad Museum there. And
yeah, and then also then there's the mission in Loyalton.
Loyalton, yeah. Yeah, very sweet little towns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, completely different than the city of Sacramento.
Actually, for them, you know, it's actually... that Reno is closer in terms of shopping and those kinds of things.
Absolutely. Well, we've had the right of election.
Yes,
and we have some pretty big numbers from Red Bluff, Sacred Heart, and St. Clair and Roseville and the Cathedral.
I had five services, 5 rights of election, and that's just been one, because we can't accommodate everybody in one
right
election,
and then
also for convenience, we've had, we still do the bulk of them at the cathedral. I did 3 of them at the cathedral. We had 1 at St. Clair's in Roseville, and then we had another one in Sacred Heart, and it's just they're beautiful ceremonies. And I say oftentimes when we have these kinds of rituals is that I come for the fun part, and I recognize all the work that has been done, both in the lives of these individuals, but then also at the parish level, and my brother priests and the catechists, and that have worked with individuals and in some cases families in getting them to this point where they want to be baptized, so they want to seek entry into the church, and all the ceremonies were just very jubilant occasions, and people were delighted. I will say that that in a special way, the cathedral celebrations of the right of election had a certain special energy because it was the cathedral, mm-hmm. and so they were just almost all of them were full. One of them was definitely, I mean, full to the brim, and it's just looking out at the congregation and particularly at those moments, like when the catechumens come up, mm-hmm. and then after that the candidates come up. Candidates being those who are already baptized, right. but need to celebrate need to receive the rest of the sacraments of initiation, confirmation, and Holy Eucharist. And so, I look out there, and you see on the faces it's all, each of them is a history. Each mm-hmm. of them is a story. It's a salvation story, right. all in itself. In many cases, not all, but in a good number of cases, there's a marriage involved. Mm-hmm. You know, that somehow either preparing to get married, or that a spouse finally decides to follow their wife or their right. husband into the church, and so besides the certain giddiness among the folks right. who are going to receive the sacraments, I mean, you can see in the sponsors, and then also out in the congregation, just their families or their friends.
Oh, yeah.
There's a certain wow. Here we are. We're almost there.
And you see it at the Vigil Mass, too, on the Saturday before Easter.
Oh, yeah, course, yeah. And that, but I mean, I guess that in certain sense, you're right about the Easter Vigil, but there's something beautiful about the folks coming together for the cathedral
right.
for the rite of election, because they're coming in from all over.
Right, right.
And so, we had, overall was 1,000 people, over 1,000 yeah. people, and... let's see, catechumens, what was the number,
455.
Yeah, 455 of catechumens
who will be baptized. 638 of candidates.
638 are, again, those individuals who will be completing the rites right. of initiation. So it was, that's a marvelous number. I know that's better than past years, and I believe it's pretty much... we're back to kind of pre-COVID mm-hmm. numbers in terms of that. So that's all, that's a credit to the Holy Spirit, and working in the lives of these people, these individuals, and spans, it's a kind of a multi-generational
right,
group
right.
there. But also it's a credit to the priests, the catechists, and their families, and who's ever accompanied accompanied these individuals and brought them to this
and then the real value of the RCIA program.
Yeah.
My mom was a candidate years ago, long before I was born. But she says she went to a Catholic nursing school in Bismarck.
Oh, okay.
And she says St. Alexis and at the University of Mary. And she said those nuns had something that I wanted. She grew up in North Dakota as Lutheran, so she was baptized. Mm-hmm. I think being Lutheran is a state law in North Dakota, maybe.
And, close to Lake Wobegon.
very close to Lake Wobegon, yes, indeed. Yeah, and she said they didn't ever beat her over the head or anything. She said they just by example, which is the best way, of course, and... So I grew up with a convert, and I'll tell you, boy, when we had Saturday morning catechism class, we didn't have a Catholic school, and 9 to 11, and sometimes you'd be a little boy praying that mom doesn't wake up. Not sure who I was praying to.
I don't know what the patron saint for that is.
Exactly. Patron saint for missing catechism. But, she was the leader of the. I mean, Dad was very devout too, but he was a cradle Catholic. But yeah. Boy, Mom, she was
very convicted.
Very convicted, and it was it was a beautiful example, yeah, you know, that this was great. Something as an adult that she had chosen.
Yeah, wow. Wow. Yeah. You know, and again, in the time that we live in today, to see people, and particularly young people, make that decision.
Yep.
I mean, in some sense, I mean, I think it's always, there's always a certain countercultural
right.
Process that would bring somebody to that, starting with, you know, Cardinal Newman.
Right.
But today, in such a secularized society, that a young person would, in some extent, kind of defy the
right.
the cultural expectations and to choose the course of religion is, you know, is again, that's the grace of the Holy Spirit. That's that that restlessness, that moaning and groaning that St. Paul talks mm-hmm. about, and that you know comes to fruition, because somebody said the right word, or somebody yeah. just smiled at them, or
yep.
or
you never know,
or sister whoever laid yeah, down the law.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. I had somebody who can not anything to do with me, but somebody that I knew who converted. That she kind of got hauled to Christmas Mass, and saw the choir, and loved the choir, and got involved in the choir, and wow. and the next thing you know, became a very devout Catholic.
Yeah.
You know, it just. It's always something different for each person. So the Eucharistic Congress coming up yeah. this weekend.
Yeah, that's right. We have the Diocesan Congress coming up this weekend, and I am excited about it. There is you know, I hear there's some there is enthusiasm out there for the Diocesan Eucharistic Congress, have it all at one place, mm-hmm. and with all the, you know, kind of the logistical challenges that gives, we decided on doing it actually in three separate places.
Right.
And not that has its own challenges, but we're going to use St. Francis Parish,
right.
Immaculate Conception Parish, and Our Lady Guadalupe Parish here in Sacramento. As three separate locations, mm-hmm. so those who are still considering going, you need to kind of go to the website or look for information at your parish that outlines, because they're all three will have different speakers
right.
and they kind of a whole different thrust or theme.
Immaculate Conception is geared toward youth.
That's right.
And obviously,
Our Lady Guadalupe will be in Spanish.
Right.
And then St. Francis will kind of be more of a general program.
Right.
But I know there are very good speakers at all three of the venues. Some of the speakers will be actually bouncing from venue to venue. And and then at about 6 o'clock, they'll have Mass around 5.
The events will start around 2.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's thank you. That's the yeah. events will start around 2. The Mass will be at about 5,
right?
And then a Eucharistic at all three locations. Eucharistic processions will start about 6, and then you know, cross your fingers they will converge at the cathedral
at the same time
yeah. for a holy hour,
right?
At the cathedral, and this is the cathedral has this. It's not necessarily the best name, but I think it's called Night Fever.
Night Fever, yes.
Yes. Right. They have a Eucharistic hour, a priest available for confessions, and go out to the bars.
They go out in the community.
Yeah, they go out to the bars.
To the bars, yeah.
In the area and invite people to come, and the people come.
On a Saturday
people
night.
Come. Yeah, on a yeah. Saturday night. So, yeah. I for better or for worse, downtown Sacramento on a Saturday night is a very busy place.
It's a very busy place,
so
yeah.
Thanks be to God, the folks there at the cathedral just do a great job on that, and have the, how should I say, the kind of religious gumption to mm-hmm. go out there and
that takes a lot of
offer somebody a candle yeah. and said, hey, you want to come down to the cathedral?
I think it's wonderful. Yeah, yeah. if there's a Kings game, maybe they can make an announcement at halftime. that Golden One is only one.
But I do want to encourage folks to be a part of that. And then May is not too far away. I don't have the dates right here in my mind. Is that we're going to have the Eucharistic procession,
right?
The national Eucharistic
all the way
procession,
to Indianapolis.
All the way to Indianapolis. We don't have to walk all the way. You and I, Bob, don't have to walk all the way to Indianapolis, but we do. You know, I will be. The Eucharist will be in procession from Vallejo.
Okay.
And all the way.
All through the diocese.
All through the diocese, all the way to South Lake Tahoe.
Wow.
And we're going to, I got this idea from my most recent trip to the Philippines. Where there in the Philippines, they have the custom of what they call fluvial processions, which are processions done in water.
Oh, wow.
And so they, obviously the Philippines, a lot of ocean, right. Water, yeah. Rivers. And so that they will have Marian processions and Eucharistic processions on with boats.
Sure.
And so... we're fortunate that we have the Delta and the river.
Yeah.
And so we'll be able to transverse a significant part of the diocese through the Delta, up the river, all the way up to Sacramento.
Boy, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So we're putting all the pieces together on that, but that's coming up. And
I think it's not the last weekend of May. I think it might be right before Memorial Day weekend. But we'll get the dates on that.
Yeah, but it will be exciting. And and then there will be several stops on land, and one of them will actually be Folsom Prison. So the Holy Eucharist will be taken in procession to Folsom Prison. The Eucharist will be offered there. The Mass will be offered there in Folsom Prison. It has a chapel in Folsom. It has a chapel that was originally built as a Catholic chapel. It's
right.
Now used for other faiths as well now. But it still has a Catholic character to the building. So we'll be offering Mass there, and then the Eucharist will be brought in procession from the prison. Out to St. John the Baptist, and
so that's quite beautiful.
And I know from speaking with Father Humberto Gomez, chaplain, that the prisoners are just delighted that they're being able to be a part of this national event.
So. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I did once years ago carry the Olympic torch for a mile.
Okay.
I was running so fast, I was afraid. I was afraid the flame would go out.
Oh yeah. Oh, that fast, huh?
Yeah, I was really fast. I think it was going to L.A. I think
gosh,
was that 84 maybe? Something like that.
I don't remember. I think it was. Yeah. And, okay, that's a while ago.
The post office was in charge of the whole setting it all up, and the postmaster called me, and the local postmaster called me and says, "Hey, we've got some slots here." And it was quite the thrill to think that it had come all the way from Greece or wherever, you know. So, but well, this would be a much greater thrill.
This is going to be quite something. I again, just to kind of lay out, we're not the only national Eucharistic procession. That there's actually four of them.
Right.
One will be starting up in north. Or, gosh, I'm trying to. I should know more information.
I think it's Seattle, but No.
I think it's probably be more. I think it's going to be. You might be right, but I thought it was maybe Wisconsin
down. You're probably right. You're probably right.
And then there was another one coming from the south. I don't remember from where. And then there'll be another one coming from the east.
Yeah.
And they're all going to converge at
Indianapolis.
In Indianapolis. So
at the Lucas Oil Stadium.
At the for the National Eucharistic Congress.
Yeah. And what happens at the National Congress?
Well, there'll be, I mean, you know, there'll be, you know, a series of events and activities, and I know that they'll obviously they'll be offering celebrating Eucharist, and so it, I mean, it's going to be a packed filled program.
Right, and just in a couple of weeks, Thursday the 21st, the Chrism Mass, the annual Chrism Mass, one of the most beautiful masses there is.
Well, Bob, yeah, I would, you know, it's it's a wonderful one of the most beautiful rituals of the church, and you know, unfortunately, a lot of people don't have a chance to to witness that, but you know, I'll say now is that you know anyone is welcome to come to to the Chrism liturgy, and you don't happen to have the time.
6 p.m.
Oh, 6 p.m.
6 p.m. at the cathedral.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the date again?
The March 21st, which is a Thursday.
That's right. It's a Thursday.
Thursday prior to Holy Week.
Yes. Yeah. Right. That's right. We now normally, according to the you know the ritual that the traditional way to do it is Thursday morning of Holy of Holy Thursday, but in the morning of Holy Thursday, you know, the bishop would gather the clergy together. But that, for a diocese our size, that's just
not possible.
Most dioceses, like, for example, when I was in Orange, we would have it the Monday or Tuesday of Holy Week.
Mm-hmm.
But again, not even that is very convenient for the priests here in Sacramento because they come from such great distances.
We've got 300 miles, I think, to Yreka.
Yeah, so in any case, we do it the week before Holy Week, and that gives the priests a chance from, you know, far away as Siskiyou and to be able to come down and be part of this gathering. And we have a day of prayer for the clergy. It's kind of a beautiful occasion of prayer and fraternity. And then we have the Mass of Chrism, which is again the where the bishop where I will consecrate all the sacred oils used by the church: the holy oil of Chrism, the oil for the sick, and the oil of catechumen. And also at that Mass is when all the priests who've been anointed with Holy Chrism, all the priests renew their priestly promises.
So and virtually every priest in the diocese will be there.
Yeah, yeah. That's it's you know, I mean, there are some who either for health or whatever reason, you know, can't make it. But yeah, mostly all the clergy come. It's a wonderful event. Yeah.
And the oil gets distributed to the priests.
Oh, yes, that night.
To take home.
Yeah, that night. So
I just, it's such a unifying, like it all starts here in Sacramento and then it goes out. And as I understand it, the oil has been raised in Yolo County.
Oh, yes, it's all local oil.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I'm in that fortunate circumstance that olive oil is, that, you know, it's one of our indigenous native products
sure
here
is.
And so
yeah.
So and we have a local Catholic farmer who generously donates the oil for the Chrism Mass, and then that oil I you know, it's a they come just to see the whole ceremony and what God does with their oil. So
the work of human hands.
Yeah, that's right.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And finally,
so again, everybody, I mean, again, if it is it's a beautiful ceremony, not, you know, it happens once a year, but the Mass is open to the public.
And I highly recommend it. Again, Thursday, March 21 at 6 p.m. at the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament in downtown Sacramento. And just very quickly, we were in the midst or the early stages of the annual Catholic appeal, which I was looking through the brochure, so many ministries are supported by this, that 25% goes back to your home parish and 50% supports all these charities under the Catholic umbrella, and then another 25% for education, including seminary and our Catholic schools.
You know, I think, you know, comparisons are always unfair, but the annual Catholic appeal in the manner that's done here in the Diocese of Sacramento is unique. And I mean, I'll say that in Orange, where I was previous to coming here, the annual Catholic appeal there, I can't remember what it was called, but the annual Catholic appeal there, most of the money went to the pastoral, helped to fund the pastoral services of the diocese, and 10% of the overall collection, was used for charities,
right?
You know, but here, again, almost over 75% of the money is used for works of charity,
right?
You know, and that is just, you know, I think that's a tribute, and I think that people in Sacramento are generous to the collection, the appeal, precisely because it helps to support so many, as you said, so many the works of mercy here, and a wide array of works of mercy and
things you don't even think of. You know, you think about hunger and clothe the naked and all the Matthew 25
That's
things,
right.
but you don't think of some of these other things, Wellspring and Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home and the Mother Teresa Maternity Home and all these other. Yeah. It's just
the work of the Sacramento Life Center and
Sacramento Life Center.
We could go on and on here.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, but it's just it's phenomenal. So I know again
a portion stays in the parish for its own charitable works.
Yeah.
So I know that the St. Vincent de Paul, you know,
St. Vincent de Paul,
a lot of support from that.
And yeah. So 25% to your own parish, another 25%, and then some 25% for education, including seminaries and tuition assistance.
It does help keep the lights on in the seminary,
yes.
And it also, but it also, I mean, I'll say that. It supports a significant number of students in our Catholic schools, and so
yeah. And maybe to close, you could give a punch in the arm to tell people about the sacrament of reconciliation during Lent. How important that is, and what a grace filled sacrament that is.
Well, you know, I was today's first reading told the story of. You know, Naaman the Syrian, who is a leper, and who comes to the prophet Elisha, and to get a cure, a healing, and Elisha goes and tells him to go and wash in the River Jordan seven times, and Naaman the Syrian is a big kind of military figure, just kind of scoffs at this. He says, you know, I mean, I came here for a healing, and he's telling me to go down and take a bath in the River Jordan, and he does it. He does it. He goes down and he's healed, and here was this very ordinary, simple human dynamic that freed Naaman the Syrian from the terrible scourge of leprosy, and that. In some sense, you know, I think people look at the sacrament of confession, and it says, "Well, there's no special effects, there's no," and of course, of all our sacraments, there's no water, there's no oil, it's just a very human conversation between two people, a priest and the penitent, and this very ordinary human dynamic, God's powerful mercy does amazing things. And perhaps because of its ordinariness, or perhaps because of our how should I say that certain skepticism about, you know, how could this really be?
Right, right.
And that people, that keeps people away. And, but I, you know, at that, I know, speaking, and I not only speak for myself, but I speak for many of my brother priests who are dedicated to the mystery of confession, that I don't think that we're instruments there, but it's clear to us that God is the one who does the work, and that our, the joy for us is to see God's mercy at work in somebody's heart, and for us, it is, you know, the people always have a sense of like, oh, Father's going to think I'm the worst person on earth.
Right.
And I, again, speaking for myself and for my brother priest, most of the time, we have only the greatest sense of admiration for people who cross that threshold. I mean, right. I think to myself, you know, myself in my own, you know, kind of skepticism, I says, you know, who's going to want to talk to me, or who would open up to me?
Right.
But people do that because of the power of the sacrament, because they trust in God's mercy.
Right.
And again, it's not me. It's what the Lord Jesus is able to do. And I would ask people to to believe in God's grace and God's mercy, and to and open themselves up to the beauty of the sacrament.
Yeah, it's a very powerful and beautiful sacrament for sure. Yeah, and we always called it confession growing up.
Yeah, the sacrament of penance, sacrament of confession. Right. That works.
Yeah, it works. Yeah, Bishop, always a joy. Thanks so much. Our prayers go with you.
Thank you, Bob, and I be sure to my prayers for everyone during this Lenten season. This is, God does amazing things, not only in the lives of those who will be baptized, but even in the many people who will approach the sacrament of confession and penance. And so there is this is the Lenten season. It's a springtime for the church.
Very good. Bishop, thanks so much.
God bless.
God bless you too. Thanks so much. We'll take a quick break, back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento, who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
This is Deacon Kevin Stasko, the Director of the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry and Family and Faith Formation, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Welcome back. And we are pleased to welcome in Glenn Faulkner, who is the Parish Security Coordinator for the entire Diocese of Sacramento. I don't know how many square miles. I see it's about 300, probably 30,000 square miles, 300,000, I don't know how many. It's a lot of square miles.
It's plenty of real estate to cover.
Yeah,
Glenn. Bob, yeah, thanks for inviting me onto the show. But yeah, it's a pretty big geographical footprint. You consider California's got 58 counties, and the Diocese of Sacramento is responsible for 20 of them. So we're it's a busy place.
Yeah, and such diversity in the diocese, a diversity of people, but diversity of landscape, and diversity of needs, and diversity of problems, et cetera. We've got extremely rural, we've got extremely urban, we've got extreme poverty, we've got extreme wealth, we've got everything.
You know, that's exactly true. It was a learning experience coming on board with the diocese. I come out of a career here in Sacramento in local law enforcement, you know, over 30 years. And so I knew municipal law enforcement in Sacramento. And while we're not, you know, we're not a big city in terms of like Los Angeles, but right. We're a city of, you know, 550,000 people. Metropolitan Sacramento is well over a million people.
Right.
You know, pre-COVID, we'd have, you know, tens of thousands of state employees coming into the city every day. And I was very comfortable dealing with, you know, the litany of different problems that have. That encounters, but now all of a sudden I'm in a position where I'm traveling out to rural, you know, rural parts of the counties with sheriff's departments where, you know, the deputy population is, you know, might be fewer than 50 deputies to cover a really big county. It's very, very rural. The crime problems can be different, and you know, you kind of have to tailor your response according to everywhere, the different places that I'm working.
Yeah, every time they hire a new person here in the diocese, the first thing they do is they check the tires on the car.
Yes, for good reason.
For good reason, because you gotta put a lot of miles on that car. Tell us a little bit about your background in law enforcement, which agencies you worked for.
Well, you know, I'm an older guy. The vast majority of my professional career was with the Sacramento Police Department. I was hired as a patrol officer. I went through the academy with them, ended up at a career that I really enjoyed. I worked there for...
Is this sort of your first real career?
Well, sort of. You know, but prior to being a police officer, I worked as a federal agent. Uh-huh. I worked as an agent for 4 years for an inspector general's office. I was based here in Sacramento. It was a small organization, but we were responsible for essentially any cases involving the U.S. Department of Interior.
Right.
So I was handling the 17 Western states in the United States. You know, my office in Sacramento handled the 17 Western states in the United States and the trust territories in the Pacific. So we did a lot of travel.
I was gonna say.
And I decided after almost 4 years with the federal government that I wanted to stay in town. I wanted to stay in Sacramento. I've been here most of my life. So I made the big switch away from the suit and tie work and ended up putting on a uniform for Sacramento Police Department. I was there for almost 30 years, retired as a lieutenant. Mm-hmm.
What were your primary roles?
You know, most of my career I spent in uniform, which would be the Office of Operations, which most people would regard as patrol.
Uh-huh.
I worked as an officer in that capacity. As a sergeant, I worked in that capacity. I did a fun thing as a sergeant. I spent 4 years on horseback. So, you know, my squad car was a quarter horse named Rocky.
Wow. And I rode him. Old Sac or where was that?
We worked, you know, we could trailer the horses anywhere, but predominantly it's downtown Sacramento and Old Sacramento. So it would be west of 16th Street, mm-hmm. and you know, kind of the JKL corridor and old Sacramento, right. A lot of that. But that was a fun job. Very very different type of a job. You know, once in a lifetime opportunity. And then ultimately, I worked as a lieutenant. A lot of that time, I worked as a watch commander, where you're the highest ranking person in charge of uniform personnel. So whatever's coming up on the street, mm-hmm. that's ultimately your mm-hmm. responsibility. I worked as an executive lieutenant, which is a little bit like being the vice principal of the school. You're working for an area captain, and you're handling a lot of the issues that are unique to your individual command, a lot of constituent work.
Right.
And then my last position before I retired, I was managing the four-county urban area security initiative grant, the UWASI grant, as it's called, which is a kind of a federal homeland security type of grant.
Oh, okay.
That in Sacramento, the Sacramento UWASI covered Yolo County, Sacramento County, El Dorado, and Placer County.
Okay.
So that was kind of, you know, my whole pedigree in a nutshell.
Wow. So what brought you to the Diocese of Sacramento?
Well, that's funny. I'm not a cradle Catholic. I ended up marrying a Catholic woman many, many years ago. We married this year is our 25th anniversary, and been going to Mass with her, and ultimately became a Catholic.
I was going to say, we just had the bishop here. We could have done it right here.
I think one of the priests beat him to it. I ended up converting to Catholicism, and you know, I ended up, ironically enough, running into a diocese employee about a short time after I retired, mm-hmm. and it was someone that I had helped in a police matter in Sacramento, and she said, "Hey, I heard that you've retired," and I said, "Well, I have, but I don't want to be retired. I'm looking for a job," and she said, "Well, the diocese has this position that they've just announced," and I looked at it, and it looked like it was something right up my aisle, and here I am.
And it's in a newly created position.
Yeah, relatively newly. It was about 4 years ago when I was hired, and I think they understood. Obviously, you know, ultimately the bishop has the best understanding of it. It was they felt they had a need that they needed to fill, and it's a unique need. You know, how do we help out? How do we help out parishes and schools scattered throughout Northern California, in everything from urban downtown Sacramento up to Modoc County, when they have a question? Or they're having an issue, dealing with a matter that might turn into a law enforcement matter. How do we address that? How do we get them the best answer possible? And so the decision was made to look for someone with a law enforcement background and see if they could interest in a job. And it's been a fantastic 4 years.
So can you give us a for instance of like what might happen in Modoc County or Siskiyou County or somewhere? Way up north, Shasta County.
Well, you know, as big and diverse as the diocese is, a lot of our problems are sometimes very much the same. And we're dealing with issues that unfortunately end up involving sometimes parish property gets damaged after hours by mm-hmm. people that are on the property. They're not there for a legitimate reason. They're not there as worshipers. They're not there, you know, seeking shelter or something like that. They've committed vandalisms.
Yeah.
And we've had everything from, we had vandalism in a Sacramento metropolitan parish where the same individual struck five times and almost destroyed the Virgin Mary statue, spray painted obscenities on the church itself, you know, something to that, right. which was very targeted. That was very, right. very targeted to sometimes things that are, more random. And so that's kind of one of the things you try to do is get and of course, I wasn't there to see the offender. I don't know what exactly was done, but you have to kind of start to look at things and going and say to yourself, is this something that we really need to pull the big red lever on? Or is this mm-hmm. something that, we're going to want to report it, but you know, what can we do to correct this, keep this from happening in the future? Can the person be apprehended? You know, mm-hmm. what do we want to do regarding that? And then what can we do to keep it from happening in the future? And a lot of times the answers, as diverse as the diocese may be, the answers a lot of times can be the same. They really can. I put things down to you. I always say that the common themes that I end up discussing, if I was to put it onto two big categories, the first thing I would say is situational awareness, right? I think mm-hmm. I think law enforcement stole that term from the military because it right. sounds really official.
Right.
But all that really means is being alert to what's going on around you and responding appropriately to what's going on. Don't ignore things, right? And then the other big thing is access control, right? How do we control who comes onto property, when they come on to the property, and where can they go once they're on the property? That's mm-hmm. what access control is. And there's no perfect answer for anything. Churches are supposed to be open and inviting places,
sure.
And of course we want them to be. But there are small steps that we can do on both of those categories, the situational awareness and the access control, that really help make our facilities a safer place. And I think when they're safer, they're also a more welcoming place.
Right. I think there's no question about that. So, boy, there are just so many issues. You know, it's amazing because we think of churches as quiet places, as places of sanctuary. We think of people going to confession, going to Holy Communion, going to Eucharistic adoration, you know, and some places have adoration 24 hours a day.
Yes.
And you kind of sometimes worry about somebody in there alone, say at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And do you reach out to parishes ahead of time and say, hey, these are things that we're concerned about, or do you react to when somebody, or is it combination of both?
It's that combination. I'm smiling because, you know, I always, unfortunately, I revert back to my police days, and law enforcement is by and large, as much as we want to be proactive, it's a reaction.
Right.
It's a reactionary type of a position. So I just try to say as much as possible. Obviously, if I receive any sort of an inquiry, any sort of a request from one of our parishes, I'm responsive to that. But I also try to get out in front on things as well. And so part of the position has even turned into sharing information about what kind of training is available that kind of helps address those problems, like especially the situational awareness problem. You know, what's available? What are common themes that other agencies, other communities have seen, you know, that have impacted community stakeholder locations like a church?
Right.
And then what can we do to hopefully teach, whether it's clergy or whether it's parish employees or a lot of times our school employees and certainly the volunteers and parishioners that are active, what can we do to help kind of teach them, hey, that's something that I've seen something about that, I've learned something mm-hmm. about that, and this is what I think I should try to do. And the goal is to try to do that. You know, I always say we have, obviously our clergy live on the property frequently. They're there every
day. Right.
We have parishioners that are there multiple times a week. I know in my neighborhood, I've got neighbors that have been attending services at our church for decades.
Right.
If you've been on that property that often and you walk in one day or drive by one night when the property's closed and you look at something and say, that doesn't look right.
Right.
It's time to, if it doesn't look right to you, it's not right. And that means that we don't ignore it. We don't panic, but we have a process in place. You know, what do we do if we found an unusual package sitting by the door? What do I do if we've received a phone call that's, you know, they're asking questions that I'm concerned about, you know? Let's have a process in place to where we're bringing this to the right people and we're taking the right steps to make sure that we don't fall victim to something, but we also taking steps to report it. Because by reporting these things, number one, we're letting law enforcement know that something's happened. I can tell you as a retired lieutenant, you know, we used to always say the common remark in law enforcement was, if you don't report it, it never happened.
Yeah,
and that's not
yeah.
the case. It did happen. You know, your car got broken into, but I'm not going to report it. Well, that's a statistic that never gets categorized. And I get it. It's a hassle to report it. They may never find anything. But law enforcement steers their resources according to where the calls for service occur.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't generate the call for service, you don't get the resource.
Right. So do you make presentations to parishes and
yes.
schools? There's obviously a difference between, there's a lot of similarities too, but a difference between parishes and schools in terms of security and crime and or potential of crime. Fortunately, it seems like, of course, you're seeing it every day, but we don't have a lot of that going on right now with what the world situation, you know, mosques, synagogues.
Yes.
They're really on high alert, I think.
Right, and I think the statistics are just shocking, particularly since the October 7th attack that occurred in Israel. You know, we've got a Jewish population in the United States of, you know, was it 2.5% or 3% of the population? And I know, I think before this started, when you looked at the bias-motivated crimes that were reported, where the bias motivation was a religious theme,
right.
The Jewish faith was receiving in excess of 50%. I think that number's actually grown. There's a lot of that to be concerned about. And I think generally speaking, you know, our parishes, I think, are safe places. But our goal is to, you know, let's do what we can to always make sure that they're safe, right? And so there are, I do make presentations, everything from active shooter instruction to, even sometimes talking with our different parish finance councils, talking about grant programs that are available. So maybe a parish can avail themselves of either state or federal funding to pay for security upgrades, you know, that they might not normally be able to afford. You know, those are very, very valuable things. And as much as possible, I think I did a quick count before I came in here, 20 counties in the diocese, so 20 sheriff's departments. I think there's 48 different municipal police departments within the diocese that I have communicated with.
Right.
Some of these are three-person police departments.
Sure.
Some of them are like my department, you know, 700 officers, or the sheriff's department in excess of 1,000. What I try to do as much as possible is involve local law enforcement to provide what training they can. So if there's an opportunity, for instance, a school wants to do an active shooter presentation, or maybe even a parish wants to arrange one for their volunteers, or some training for a parish security committee, I'm certainly willing and able to come in and discuss these matters. But I try to get local law enforcement on for two important reasons. One, I want to have that face-to-face interaction where they get to know the officers in their community and the officers get to know them. And then secondly, I always say I want the boots on the ground. I want the officers to be able to, and I've done this, walk the campus,
mm-hmm.
get an idea of what the layout is. That way, if they ever have to respond there in an emergency,
they know.
It's not their first time on the campus.
Right.
And what I've found is that's not hard to do in the smaller communities. I've yet to go to one of our smaller counties and talk with a police officer and have to explain to them where one of our churches was located. I don't think it's ever happened. In larger Sacramento, where we have many, many officers who don't even live in Sacramento County, so they're just on patrol. If they're not going to a location all the time, it's just a thing they're driving by at 40 miles an hour.
Yep.
So it's very useful to get them on, get their boots into our campus, you know, to look around then.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Glenn, we only got a few minutes, but internet safety. Every parent worries about it, for sure.
Right.
But everybody needs to worry about it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I am not an IT people in the building can verify this. I am not an IT tech sort of a guy. I'm a bit of a dinosaur. But what we found
is that's two of us.
There's unfortunately all the advancements that have been made in terms of technology and internet development have created a lot of opportunities for bad things to happen. One of the things that I've worked on in the last 2 years is getting professionals to come in and make presentations for our schools. By that, I mean not just our school staff, but our parents and our students as well on cyber crimes that are targeting children. One of the big things that's unfortunately come out, the FBI has very recently put out publications about it, are these crimes they refer to as sextortion, which is, mm-hmm. you know, unfortunately, they've seen a huge increase in these crimes in the last probably two and a half years, mostly targeting teenage boys, many of this happening from offenders that are outside the country where they lure this young man into thinking that they're a young lady and sending inappropriate photographs and then for financial purposes try to extort them for money. I've been very fortunate to work with the sheriff's department, had a detective, did a fantastic presentation for our school's community. Last year, the FBI had one of their agents deliver a similar type of presentation. I think between the two different presentations, we had over 300 participants.
Wow.
You know, that's one type of internet crime that happens. And unfortunately, we have others as well where people are able to get a hold of phone numbers going through past parish publications, weekly bulletins, and pull out phone numbers and emails and then go after volunteers. Hi, I'm Father so-and-so. They'll present themselves to be the parish priest. I need you to go buy me some gift cards for someone who's ill. And next thing you know, someone's lost, you know, hundreds of dollars for gift cards.
Right.
The opportunities for cyber crimes, I think, are they're virtually limitless as the technology increases. But I try to educate to that as much as possible too.
Wow, difficult stuff, Glenn. You've got a tough job.
It's been a fun job. I have to tell you, it's. I enjoy it. I enjoy being here. I like the people I work with. I certainly like the cause, and I've been able to put my small talents to work. Hopefully, within our diocese, it's something I really enjoy doing.
You have a email or phone number you want to give out to people to let them know?
The email address for me is like all of us at the pastoral center is my first initial and last name. So G Faulkner. GFAULKNER at SCD.org. And my office line is 733-0125. I'm so used
to
the
916 area.
And it's 916, yeah. I'm used to my cell phone number. I forget the hard line
numbers. The hardest number to remember is your own phone number because you rarely dial it.
That's correct.
Yeah. Glenn, a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
I hope you won't be a stranger to this program because you got a lot to add.
Oh, very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Glenn. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless.
We stand and lift up our hands for the joy of the Lord is our strength. We bow down and worship Him now. How great, how awesome is He? And together we sing.